When it comes to the story of gang violence in Vancouver, you might remember 2009 as a deadly climax. More than 30 gang-related shootings in the first 2 months of the year, over a dozen murders.
Someone used a machine gun to spray more than 40 bullets in a packed mall parking lot in Langley. Crowds, kids, and broad daylight seemed to be no deterrence to the shooters.
Police at the time talked about the Red Scorpions, the United Nations, the Hells Angels, all competing for control of the illegal drug market. In the years since, even though millions have been invested in enforcement and prevention, the problem has persisted, violence often erupting in waves, a really concerning one in the last 3 weeks. There have been 10 shootings, 8 of them fatal, and most believed to be connected to gang conflict.
Two fatal shootings over the weekend linked to a wave of gang violence.
Two teens killed within 24 hours.
Brazen shooting of a BC corrections officer outside a shopping mall.
The most brazen one happened on Sunday in broad daylight at the very public Vancouver International Airport. Today, we talked to two people who are working with families directly affected by this type of violence. Harpreet Singh and Manpreet Sarai work with the anti-gang program at the South Asian Community Resource Office in Abbotsford. Hello, Harpreet. Hello, Manpreet. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Hi, thank you.
So Manpreet, I'd like to start with you. The shooting on Sunday was very public.
It was, as you can imagine, a chaotic scene as passengers heard gunshots.
You know, bam, 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 pop, pop, pop. I mean, it was so fast. I saw bullets ricocheting off the window.
The suspects escaped in a getaway car, which was intercepted by police. They shot at the officers. The police didn't fire back, I understand, or keep chasing for fears that others in the area would get hurt.
Oh, high-speed chase behind me.
This is video of the moment, Mounties say. A gunman set his sights on police.
Holy, there's gunshots.
And were you surprised by how brazen it was?
Yes, I was very surprised, just because it's such a public place. Other shootings that have happened locally are in public places also, but just having it at the airport is very scary and frightening for the community and for the parents thinking. They thought that a place that was might have more security than other places, might have more camera coverage, that this would not happen there. So it is very frightening for a lot of people in the community.
Right. And you mentioned other shootings. I know on Saturday in Burnaby, a 19-year-old was killed outside a local vape store.
An innocent bystander was injured. Blurton DeLeepy was killed. A murder charge has now been laid in a shooting.
Another recent shooting took place in a very public place near a popular restaurant.
Harpreet Singh Dhaliwal of Abbotsford was gunned down just steps away from innocent bystanders. A firearm equipped with a silencer seen near his body.
So you couldn't hear any noise. You just heard screaming.
Two others in mall parking lots. And Manpreet, I understand too that there are some very young people involved here. So I mentioned the 19-year-old victim from Saturday. A 20-year-old has been arrested in that shooting. And then back in December, a 14-year-old was shot coming out of a taxi, right? What's going on here?
So it's so heartbreaking to see at the end of the day, these youth and these young adults losing their lives to gang violence. It's hard to see that no one values, the human life, and seeing that these youth and these young people are, you know, they're someone's son, they're someone's family members. And it's just, again, it's super heartbreaking to see. It's harsh that the gangs are doing this to young children.
Harpreet, if I could bring you in here. Officials have said that they believe that this recent spate of violence is connected to Lower Mainland gang conflict. And can you tell me a little bit about the groups involved here? Manpreet talked about, you know, young people being brought in to this. Like, who are we talking about here?
So we're generally talking about youth, from ages as young as almost 11 being groomed into this, right? Like middle school ages, up until the 30s that we're seeing right now that are in the news the most, right? You're seeing a lot of smaller gangs pop up as well, a lot of groups that are just kind of copying and being influenced by these larger things that are happening right now in the media. But the thing is, right now, you're seeing a lot of individuals that are connected to what's happening in the news. They're kind of just playing tag, right? Unfortunately, I don't want to equate it to a game, but you're seeing it's kind of tit for tat, right? They don't want to leave it in the law enforcement's hands. They want to take care of the situation by themselves. If you get my guy, I'm going to get your guy. And these bigger gangs have reached out to a lot of these smaller groups as well, just to kind of have a wider spread, a wider connection, a wider network as well. And unfortunately, yeah, we're seeing kids that are as young as 11 being groomed into this type of lifestyle.
Wow. You mentioned sort of a tit for tat. Are you saying that some of the shootings in recent weeks could be sort of retribution?
Yeah, and that's kind of the way it seems. It seems like most of the shootings that have happened have been directly related to the gang conflict, right? And especially with the youth that we work with, they tend to have more information than we give credit to. Kids are actually quite knowledgeable about this stuff. But when it comes to someone being targeted, it's usually because someone from their own group was targeted before that. So they're just trying to get a type of revenge.
The groups, you mentioned some larger groups and sort of smaller groups. The Vancouver Sun's Kim Bolin is reporting that 28-year-old Carmen Graywell, who was the man killed at the Vancouver airport on Sunday, was associated or was a member of the United Nations gang, which is a gang that's been involved in the drug trade for about 15 years now.
Graywell, 28 years old, had already been involved for at least a decade. Several years ago, Surrey RCMP issued a public warning for people to stay away from Mr. Graywell and his associates because at that point in time, they were being targeted in shootings, and there was concern that if you were near them, you might get hit.
Kim Bolin has also reported that shooting of Harb Dhaliwal, that he was a member of the Brothers Keepers gang. Can you tell me a little bit more about the landscape here, what these groups are involved in?
Pretty much you have these kind of factions that are, versing against each other, right? Whether it's for territory or distribution or pretty much the illegal drug trade in general. But the thing is, when it comes to the younger groups of individuals that are starting to create their own groups and their own branded identity, I don't want to really say their names because I don't want to give them like a platform or outlet, especially when they're not really, as widely known. And I don't want to give them that type of credentials, I guess you could say. But the thing is, these higher known gangs that are in the media, they're definitely reaching out to these younger individuals and they're trying to build up their network so that they have the numbers, almost like, I don't want to use the word army, but almost that you can reach out and get the support that you need when conflict is rising. And that is kind of what we have been seeing, right? And the gangs that you have mentioned, they are the ones that are up there and that they are the ones that are being the loudest, you could say, when it comes to these type of conflicts.
Manpreet, on that note, police, government officials, advocates have all acknowledged that the problem of gang violence disproportionately affects the South Asian community in Metro Vancouver. And can you help me understand why that is?
So what we see with our South Asian youth, we see a cultural gap, we see a generation gap with the parents. Parents are working very hard. Parents are worried about the stigma that they're going to receive if they go get support. They have a hard time accepting that their youth is going down the wrong path. And when they do accept it, sometimes the youth has gone too far. And also they're worried about what their neighbors or their family members are going to think. But I think it's time that they start worrying about it and they support their youth and try to get the support that they need.
Mm-hmm. Harpreet, could I get your take on this question as well? Can you tell me a little bit more about the youth that you're working with?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're looking at the risk factors that are involved, there are a lot of trends that we are seeing that are coming up consistently. Because we have a lot of youth on our caseload and we have a really long wait list as well. Historically, you see gang entry usually being due to necessity for money and funds, right? But in modern times, especially in this digital age, that's not really the case, especially with this demographic. Unfortunately, what we're seeing is a lot of trends of undiagnosed mental health issues, not only for the youth, but for the family as well. For some reason, assessments just weren't done when the youth were growing up. And it could be, generational from parent to youth as well. We're also seeing a lot of child youth trauma or abuse that's resurfacing for the youth, or some things that they've witnessed in the home that's resurfacing. A lot of neglectful parenting styles that Manpreet kind of touched up on, just because the immigrant parents, they're working extremely long hours and they're just not home. Or due to, like, unfortunately, like, older cultural gender roles that the males might have, and they might push on the females in the house. Because of that, there's not a lot of male positive role models in the house. And we're seeing a lot of isolated and young, lonely men that are trying to find a sense of belonging, and they are trying to find it anywhere they can. And unfortunately, they are finding it in the wrong places.
Manpreet, I understand you work with the parents quite a bit. And can you tell me about some of the conversations that you have from them? What do you hear from them?
So some of these parents, the kids might just be getting in fights at the school. And these parents think, okay, that's okay, just a fight at school. Mm-hmm. But we don't know what's happening in the background. There might be a whole lot of other things that are happening in the background. These fights might be to see who's the tough guy, who's gonna, you know, who can actually hurt someone physically. And then those kids eventually get recruited into these gangs. So there's so much that happens behind the scenes, and the parents, they really don't know what to expect from all this. We see mostly moms come in for service. The fathers don't come in to support the youth and don't support them fully. So that's another thing. And sometimes
tell me more about why you think that is. Does it harken back to
what Harpreet? Yeah, it's also because some of the moms, they will come in for the service. They know everything that's going on with the youth at school, and they're afraid to go home and tell the dad that there could be, you know, violence in the home. She will get blamed for everything because she, in the culture, it's expected that mom's to blame for everything. If she's at home taking care of the kids, if she's the one that's going to be responsible for the kids during the day, it's her fault. It's going to be her fault. So for her to take all that blame on, and she, even though the father figures need to step up and, you know, take that role that they're, you know, that they're supposed to be taking, they're not taking it. And they're, instead of being there supportive with their wife in the decisions that need to be made, they blame the other parent.
Harpreet, how can you tell when a young person is really involved in a risky, dangerous situation, especially because you know you mentioned earlier that a lot of these young kids are in, like, very sort of low level, I would imagine, not even organized groups at all, right? And so, like, when do those alarm bells start going off for you?
Well, to be honest, you sometimes will get that kind of cry for help from youth, where they will actively tell you that I'm part of this group, or I'm associated with these people, right? And for them, they will just straight up say that this is going to go down. I don't want to be part of it. I'm kind of scared, this, that, right? But outside of that, if they can't be upfront with you, you got to look for telltale signs. Are they leaving the house for small periods of time throughout the day, right? Constantly. Do they have more than one cell phone? Are you finding cash on them? Are you finding, drugs on them, or quite a bit of drugs on them in the house, right? And that has been an issue in the past, where parents will find that, but they're so scared of being labeled and blamed that they will hide that from the general public to protect their children.
Right.
Are they hanging out with older individuals? Are they getting picked up from different cars, or are different people showing up to the house constantly, right? That could be a huge sign that they might be connected to something.
It strikes me when people think about gangs in British Columbia and Vancouver, they might immediately think of, like, the Hells Angels or like the Triads gangs, which, you know, are huge international drug trafficking gangs. But I know we've touched on this. I just think it might be worth talking about one more time that this is really something different here.
It definitely is. We have just with the other names coming up, whether it's United Nations, whether it's Brothers Keepers, these young kids know the names. They know what's going on with, they know the information before we do. And sometimes it's very important for these youth to have a status. They feel status is very important to show that they are someone, to be part of the tough group at school.
There's another story that comes to mind just quickly where, as Madhuri talks about kind of like the male bravado and the ego, you know, coming up, especially in our culture, like the South Asian culture for males, it's very hard for them to express their emotions and be vulnerable and allow for that type of growth, emotional growth to happen. But we had a situation where they actually were actively involved in moving certain, as they call, product, right, from city to city. But mom was able to find a lot of money on the youth and certain things, and she came to us for help. And we started off with counseling, and we found and one-on-one sessions and just sessions just to have empathy and validation for the youth. And we found a lot of child youth trauma, a lot of hidden trauma that the youth was hiding regarding the father. And they never learned how to express themselves healthily, right? In a healthy way. Their coping skills just weren't there when it came to their trauma and their abuse and the things that they had faced. But through the counseling and through just the one-on-one work and being able to open up, they were able to completely put that life behind them and get into university, right? So that type of vulnerability and willingness to actually accept that emotional change, that's huge. But when we are able to achieve that, we find the greatest growth. But that is one of the biggest barriers, because especially in this culture, it's very hard to men to reach out for health. And we see a lot of young males suffering because they just won't align with their emotional needs.
One final question for you both before we go today. Earlier this week, former BC Solicitor General Cash Heed, a longtime police officer who used to be on this file, said that the police need to rethink their strategies in dealing with violent gangsters willing to hunt rivals anywhere, anytime. That there needs to be a, quote, very, very aggressive, suppressive approach.
You've got to be in the face of these gangsters. We've got an insurmountable amount of intelligence based on who these people are. We've got to look at creative ways of getting this information out to the public. Take the glamour out of this gang attitude and bravado and put it where it belongs. And that's, you act like that, you're going to get thrown in jail.
I wonder if you could respond to that statement. What action would you like to see from police and or different levels of government? Manpreet, how about we start with you?
So I agree that suppression is very important when things get so out of hand, but it's not like here locally our police is doing an amazing job. Luckily we are not seeing this violence in Abbotsford right now, but it's in our neighboring cities. But it's so sad to see that, you know, so many of our youth are young adults are dying. But at the same time, if there is a way that I think that the policing community will find a way of seeing what works best for them and how to handle this, because they've been doing this longer than we have.
Harpreet, thoughts on that?
When we focus more on suppression, right? Obviously safety is an issue. We got to think about the general public in the moment, in the right now, right? So that's definitely a huge need. And I do feel like the police are doing the best that they can, right? But I feel like we need to focus more on prevention, right? Because the thing is, that type of cycle, it's easy for us to look at youth in gangs and just call them gangster, but we forget a lot of the trauma that they went through growing up that led them to this lifestyle, the risk factors that led them to this lifestyle. So if we can actually focus more on preventative measures, we can save not only that youth, but also their potential kids and cut that cycle of trauma out, right? And try to garner a better future. Because we've heard before when youth go to jail, they tend to learn to become better criminals, right? Very few will come out of jail and they will have the expertise that they need to come back into society a better person, right? Unfortunately. But the thing is, yeah, we do have great stories of people coming out of jail or prison, and they are becoming better citizens and people for themselves. But I think prevention is where a lot of the focus needs to go, especially in the next 5-10 years. But I know right now things are rampant on the streets, and the community is very scared, especially in a pandemic. So I can definitely see the need for suppression right now as well.
Okay, thank you both for your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
Some other news from British Columbia to update you on. The provincial government will start giving all workers, whether they're part-time or full-time, up to 3 days of paid sick leave if they have to miss work due to COVID-19. This new legislation introduced on Tuesday says that workers will be covered if they have COVID symptoms, are self-isolating, or waiting for tests. Employers will need to pay workers full wages, and the province will reimburse employers without an existing sick leave program up to $200 a day for each absent worker. The Ontario government announced something similar a few weeks ago after months of urgent calls to do so. And the Ontario and Alberta governments have both announced they will no longer offer the AstraZeneca vaccine as first doses. Alberta cited supply, Ontario the blood clot issue. We'll keep you posted on further guidance on this. That's all for today, though. I'm Jamie Poisson. Thanks so much for listening to Front Burner. We'll talk to you tomorrow.